Good morning, church. It is always a privilege to be here. If you don't know me, my name is Rob. I'm not American. I'm Scottish. I've lived in the U.S. for 13 years now. And my wife is American, and she came to Scotland as a missionary to pioneer Chi Alpha. And then as time went on and so on, she got married. She had her first child. And we moved back, or I moved to the U.S., when our little guy was 11 weeks old. And we've been in the U.S. now for, as I said, 13 years, and we pioneered Yale just about 9-10 years ago. And again, as ever, I just want to say how grateful and thankful we are to all of you. You guys give sacrificially through praying for us and through giving financially, and I think it's such an amazing thing because you don't really get to see where those dollars go. You give and you just look for the blessing to be there. And we are incredibly grateful because you guys allow us to fulfill the call and mission that God has put in our heart to reach the world changers at Yale. These people who will go on and change your life and my life for years to come as they become educators and people who decide education policy and government people and all people that touch us in some way. And our mission is to see them become marketplace missionaries, where they are changed by Jesus and they go into the marketplace, but their worldview is grounded in Him. So we are incredibly grateful for your giving and your generosity this last year. We baptized students right in the middle of Old Campus at Yale. We blew up a kid's paddling pool. We filled it with water. We dunked them. And their friends who had no faith would come and see them be baptized. So we saw students come to faith. We saw students get baptized. And we saw students grow in their faith. So we just want to start by saying thank you. We're really grateful for what you allow us to do. It really is a blessing, and we're grateful for every one of you. So this morning we're in the Psalms, and I want to start by telling you a story from an old TV show called Seinfeld. You may have heard it, you may have watched Seinfeld. But in one episode, Seinfeld and Elaine are invited by friends to come up to their house in the Hamptons because they had just had a baby. So Seinfeld and Elaine go up to this home, and there's lots of people there. And it becomes quite clear when they see the couple and the new baby, to put it diplomatically, this baby may not win the most beautiful baby award. Because Seinfeld and Elaine are trying to think of words to describe and compliment this baby, and they're kind of struggling. Well, anyway, the show goes on, and then another guest arrives, and he is a dashing doctor. And he comes in, and clearly everyone looks at him, and he's handsome, and he clearly has affluence, and he's rich. And he comes up to Elaine, and he starts to wow her with his words. And he affirms her, and he looks at her, and he says, "Breathtaking." And Elaine is totally taken in by it, and they begin this conversation, and you can see that Elaine is really liking this guy. Well, he moves on. And the scene cuts to him coming to the baby in the crib. And he looks in the crib and he looks at the baby and he says, "Breathtaking." And Elaine hears him say it. And you can see by her face, she's like, what did his words mean? He calls me breathtaking. He calls the baby breathtaking. What did he mean by his words? You know, I think there's an epidemic, it's not COVID, that we're facing at the moment, nor is it monkeypox. But I think there's an epidemic that is growing, and in fact, it might even be endemic. What do I mean? How we use our words to get what we want. How we use our words to get what we want. I called this morning lion lips, flattering lips, and godly lips. We use our words. I thought I died there. To get what we want. So let's look at the psalm we're considering this morning. It's Psalm 12. And what do we see in Psalm 12? We see these words. "Help, O Lord, for there is no longer anyone who is godly. The faithful have disappeared from humankind. They utter lies to each other. With flattering lips and a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that makes great boasts. Those who say, with our tongues we will prevail. Our lips are our own. Who is our master? You know, as I sit with students day upon day and listening to the story, as I look at the social media, as I look at the news, it just seems like there is an endemic nature in our culture now where we will use our words to get whatever we want. We'll use lying lips and we'll use flattering lips so that we will win in the end of the day. Yet what do we see in Psalm 12? We see the psalmist say, David say, this is what people do. They flatter, they're double-hearted, they lie. But you see, in Psalm 12, there's an even older word that this is based on. It's Exodus 20. And Exodus 20, 16 is what we call one of the Ten Commandments. And it simply says this, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You see, when David has this psalm, when he writes this psalm, at the root of it is going back even further to Exodus. You see, when God gave the Ten Commandments, we think of them as the rules, as the do's and don'ts, but that's not what they're there for. They were to shape a community that community would look so different from the world around them. And when I used to read about don't bear false witness, I thought that just meant just don't lie. And I'm pretty good at that. I'm pretty good at not lying. But the more you dig into the word in Exodus, it reflects so much more in what David is saying. He's saying, it's not just lying, it's when you flatter with these lips. It's when it's a reflection of your heart, how you're living. And so this morning we're going to look at Psalm 12 and that root word in Exodus, that ninth commandment. Because there's three things that we are tempted to do today. And the first one is to flatter with our lips, to get what we want. The second thing we're tempted to do is to slander with our lips, to make us look better. And the third thing we're willing to do is to misattribute things so that we win. And we'll come on to that in a moment. But these are three things that this psalm speaks to. And church, we have to live differently from the world. When we live like the world, there is no fragrance of Jesus. There's nothing different about us. And when this is the culture and the pattern of the world, when we live differently, we will stand out, but not in a boastful way, not in a moralistic way, but in a way that the fragrance of Jesus will bring life. When we live contrary to lying lips, flattering lips, are using their lips to get what we want. So that's what we're going to look at this morning. So what are flattering lips? Well, flattering lips is when we use our words to get what we want, but it sounds like a compliment. And it sounds like it's for someone else, but the reality is, it's for us. A lot of students at Yale in their senior year go into the societies. And when we first went there, I thought they were all secret. I thought you were only in a society, it was a secret society. And I'm like, I don't know if that's really Christian. I don't really know if I like that. A secret society. And then one of our students got in and I was like, I need to talk to him about this because I don't think this is the right way we live. So I meet with him and he tells me he actually got into the best society at Yale for seniors. George W. Bush was in this society. His dad was in this society. John Kerry was in the society. I'm like, whoa, dude. And then I was like, but I thought you're not supposed to tell me. I thought I'm not supposed to know that you're in a society. I thought it was a secret. And he laughed and looked at me and went, Rob, that's not true. He said, the reason a society will keep secret is for one reason and one reason alone. If a junior knows that you're in a society they want to get into, they will start flattering you so that you will recommend them for that society. The only reason we don't tell is so that we're not plagued by juniors going, I think you're the best. You're awesome. Please put my name in for that society. And I was like, oh, I thought it was a whole secret thing. And he's like, no. is just so that we're not pestered by people who will flatter us day in and day out. You see, this is what flattery is. It's a compliment, but it's not for the other person. It's for you. Because you're trying to leverage their power for your advantage. So that you can go forward, that you can advance, or you will get what you want. That's flattery. But it sounds innocent. It sounds like an affirmation. It sounds like you're complimenting someone. You're saying, you're breathtaking. But the reality is, it's so that you can win something. You know, we can see it through the Testaments. In the Old Testament, in Proverbs, it says this in Proverbs 26, a flattering mouth works to ruin. And then Jesus in the New Testament is sitting with a whole bunch of people, and some of the religious people there, and they begin to flatter him with their words. But Jesus, being Jesus, sees right through it. And he draws a line from their lips to their heart, and he says this, as only Jesus can, you brood of vipers, how can you speak good things when you're evil? For out of the abundance of the mouth, the heart speaks. You see, flattery begins in our heart. And it comes out of our mouth to get what we want. And Jesus, in this story, draws a line directly from our heart to our mouth and says, there's a connection. It doesn't come out of nowhere. It comes out of an intention that you have. But here's the deal. It is so tempting to flatter in our culture, isn't it? Flatter our boss just so that we can get away a little bit early on Friday. Flatter our neighbor when we plant those line of trees that are going to go right into the yard. Flatter our kids to manipulate them for our benefit. It's easy to flatter, and it sounds so innocent. So how do we walk away from that? Do we just try with all our will and effort, I will not flatter, I will not flatter, I will not flatter? Do we just hope and will that we can be different? That's not going to work. We need Jesus. If we are going to change these lips, it cannot be through our effort, our hard work, because that is us. And I can tell you, it doesn't go very long or very far. But when we come to Jesus and say, Jesus, help me. I'm going to surrender my lips that want to flatter. And when we do that with open hands and he comes in, he changes this that needs to be changed. And then that changes this. Because if I just try and work on this, this is still the same. But when I come to Jesus and say, I don't like how I use my words at times, Lord. I surrender my heart to you. Things change. So what about in flattery? What do we do then? I have one very simple practice or discipline for us. Affirm someone when it is no advantage to you. Let me say that again. Affirm someone when it is no advantage to you. Well, what do I mean? You go up to someone in the worship team and you say, man, your playing this morning was awesome. That is no advantage to me because I can neither sing nor play, let me just say. As a child, I got a non-singing part in a musical. For real. In high school, I got a non-singing part in a musical. So to me, that is no advantage to go and say to someone and compliment or affirm them and say, that was awesome. You see, when we do that, when we do it with no win for us, that desire to flatter dies. So my first encouragement this morning is this. When we want to flatter with our lips, surrender our heart to Jesus and ask him to show you people that you can affirm just because you can affirm them. And that can be in here, that can be your in your home, it can be your neighbor, it can be your work colleague. But when you know your motive is for nothing more than I'm just going to affirm you, then that's not flattering lips. So the first thing we see in Psalm 12 is this flattering lips. The second thing we see is slander. Slander. This is a hard one. What's slander? It's when we use our words to pull someone else down. Now, there's different ways we can slander. We can just fire it straight out of our mouth, a verbal assault on someone else, and we slander them. But we can do it much more subtly. We can just leave the little breadcrumbs all around, just enough that someone else begins to think differently about that person. It doesn't seem like slander, but we have just laid the breadcrumbs that they're eventually like, yeah, I think you're right. I don't think they are a very kind person. So slander can take multiple forms, but again, it is slanderable. What is that? It is when we make us look better than someone else. We slander them. We make ourselves look more right, more holy, good, whatever it may be, but we are going to pull someone else's reputation down and in the same time pushing ourselves up. That's slander. See, can you see again how this goes back to this ninth commandment? I said the ninth commandment is not just about don't lie. It's about how you live before others. The people of Israel had to live differently. And it's the same for you and me today. When we don't slander, the fragrance of Jesus is present in our words. And it's attractive. But when we slander, it's like the words of death. It's a stench. And no one wins. So we see here this idea of slander. Jane Wilkin, who's a Christian author, she's written a lot on slander, and she says this. When we think about flattery or misattribution, they are the subtle pickpockets of someone's reputation. But slander, well, slander stands in the lobby of First Reputation Bank and sprays its bullets and empties the vault. You see, in our modern church, perhaps nothing attests more to the epidemic we find within us than our casual, thoughtless, and frequent commission of the sin of slander. She ends with this. We are virtual Bonnies and Clydes, sitting with fully loaded keyboards and fully seared consciences. You see, we get online and we tear someone down because we don't agree with them. We slander someone because they hurt us. Said something mean, did something that was negative. And so we'll make sure everyone else knows what they said or what they did. We'll slander them. We'll pull them down. And we can either do that with our words or with our keyboard or with our phone. But the point is, we will look better. We will look more holy or righteous or virtuous or good or whatever it may be. But no one wins. Years ago, I was sitting in the coffee lounge in our church in Scotland, and two people who I loved and respected dearly were sitting over in the corner, and their heads were together, and they were clearly talking. And I felt the Lord say to me, they are currently slandering and pulling someone down. I was like, no, Lord. They're really great people. But the Lord said, no, they are tearing someone down. And this was the phrase I heard in my heart. Like bees round honey, are they around the sin of slander? I was like, whoa, Lord. Like bees round honey, are they around the sin of slander? And the sad reality was it was true. They were pulling someone down. And have ever been those conversations when someone slandered someone, you come away and you just don't feel good. You weren't doing the slandering, but it's a conversation you come away like, that was icky. I don't like that. Church, we are called to bring the fragrance of Jesus, words of life. And this psalm is telling us to live differently from our world, differently from our culture, that we will be built up, but those who come in will see Jesus. First Peter says this, put away all malice and deceit and hypocrisy and envy and all slander. So how do we do this one? Again, we can't just, I'm going to work really hard at not slandering someone. Because Jesus says, remember, the lips are connected to the heart. So what needs to change in here? Well, again, here's a really easy practice or discipline. Once we begin to surrender this heart to Jesus, we ask the Holy Spirit, can you help me to live differently? And here's a way you can do it. When someone is slandering someone else, when you want to slander someone else, see this, just keep it closed. I know they could have said something really mean. I know that could have been really hurtful. I get that. So go speak to them. Don't speak to others. Don't take it to someone else so that you feel better, look better, raise yourself up as you tear that other person down. So the first thing is, have silence as a discipline. When you want to go and tear someone down because of what they said or did, just keep it here. Go to God and go to them. But here's the other thing you can do. When you hear someone slandering someone else, deal with it. Now, here's what I don't recommend you do. Don't, if there's a small group of you and someone's slandering someone, point at them and say, yo, stop. I'm not keen on that, I have to say. But see, after that conversation, take them aside. And with all humility and grace, acknowledging that we can do the exact same, say, hey, what was that about? What's happened? Why did you feel you have to do that? But when it comes to slander, keep this quiet when we want to tear into someone. But when you see someone else doing it, retain their dignity, take them aside and say, can we talk? What's going on? Here's the final way we use our words to get what we want. It's called the sin of misattribution. What is that? Well, let me paint you a picture. You're at work. You're doing a group project. First of all, you don't want to do a group project. No one likes doing group projects. But at work, you're in a team, you're doing a group project, a team project. And let's be honest, because you didn't really want to do it, you really have not done much work for this team project. You have probably done 15% of your effort that you know you could have done. And the rest of the team's working really hard, and you're putting the bare minimum in. Well, you present before your boss. The boss loves it. Great project. And singles you out and says, that was phenomenal work. And you go, thanks very much. Yep, you're right, it was. And you take the credit when in your heart you know, I do not deserve this. That's the sin of misattribution when we still use our words to get what we want. It can be the opposite as well. You're in that team project, you're all in the briefing, the boss tells you what you want to do, you go away and your team lead somehow completely misinterpreted the brief, completely got it wrong. But you all work on the project, no one corrects the mistake, you go to your boss looks at what you've done and is like, this was not what I asked for at all. What did you guys do? And you say, it was him. He did it. He got it wrong. I was just on the team. He was leading the team. You could have corrected it. You were there in the brief. You were there all the way along. You chose not to. But you're going to make sure that they take the fall. That's the sin of misattribution. You are equally guilty. But you're going to make sure that someone knows, not my fault, it's his. It's hers. It's not mine. You see, again, we're still using our mouth to get what we want. Either we're taking credit we don't deserve, or literally we're throwing someone under the bus. It's all them, it's their fault. Fire them. I'm great. Now, again, how are we going to change that? If we just try and do it, it's so much effort. It's so much hard work. But when we come to Jesus and say, Jesus, will you change my heart and my words in these moments that I'm a good team player? Can you do that for me, Lord? He can and he does. So here's what we do. We learn honesty. So when we get that glowing praise and we know it's not ours, what do? We take the light and we shine on the person who deserves it. Actually, really, Jillian, she did all the work. She deserves this. We just took the spotlight off of us and put it on someone else. Or, when we were about to throw that person under the bus, we're honest with ourselves and with others and say, you know what, no, I have to take blame. I should have seen this and I should have corrected it. That is not how our world operates. Our world operates on me first. Do whatever it takes to get ahead. So when you live like this, you bring the fragrance of Jesus. It is so different from our culture. People will see it and be like, why on earth are you doing that? Psalm 12. Help, O Lord, for there is no longer anyone who's godly. The faithful have disappeared from humankind. They utter lies to each other with flattering lips and a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that makes great boasts. Those who say, with our tongues we will prevail. Our lips are our own. Who is our master? Can I say that is the mantra of our world? In church, we have to live differently. And we can't do it in our strength. We need Jesus. Because when we live with honest lips, affirming lips, encouraging lips, challenging lips, truthful lips, there's something about Jesus that manifests in those moments and things change. Jesus never used his words to flatter. Jesus never used his words to slander. Jesus used hard words, truthful words, but they were words of life. He did not manipulate, he did not misattribute, he did not flatter, and he did not slander. But from the Gospels, we can see he lived with people around him who tried to flatter him, who slandered him, who misattributed things to him. He said this, he didn't say that. So Jesus knows what it's like to live in a world where this is normal. So when we come to him and say, Lord, I have to live in the world, but I don't want to live like the world. He's like, come on then. Let my spirit change you. It can be done. I know what that's like. I've lived in that world. Friends, Psalm 12, flattering lips and lying lips. But you and I, we're called to live with godly lips. So this morning, do we use slander to get what we want? To get our own way and get ahead? Do we find pleasure in slandering others so that we look better? Or we're seen in a better light? Or do we take credit when it's not due? Or do we try and throw people under the bus just to escape something we know we deserve? When we realize that, when we come and acknowledge our brokenness and realize, God, maybe I'm just not living as you call me to live. Maybe I'm living like everyone else. When we have that revelation of the Holy Spirit, and then we come to God with open hands and say, but you can change me. Not me, but you. And as we allow the breath of God, the Spirit of God to fall upon us, to fill us, to reorder the loves of this heart, then we can put away flattery, and we can put away slander, and we can put away everything else with our lips to get us ahead and say, Lord, I will live with affirming lips, encouraging lips, honest lips, truthful lips. And through that, Jesus is presented to those around us, and everything can change. I don't know about you, but I want to live in that community. I want to live in that world that is so different from what I see around me.